took a supachutam kanayati mani nupurabhyam rije munguliha valaya vyajanagra hasta vastantha gudha kucha kumkum sonahara basa nitambha drittaya cha paradhyaya kancha. Her hand adorned with rings, bangles, and with the chamara fan, Queen Rukmini looked resplendent, standing near Lord Krishna. Her jeweled ankle bells tinkled, and her necklace glittered. Reddened by the kumkum from her breasts, which were covered by the end of her sari, on her hips she wore a priceless belt. Purport Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that as Queen Rukmini fanned her lord with broad strokes, the jewels and gold on her beautiful limbs resounded with the efforts. And the last verse I'll read. Tam rupinam shriyam ananya gatim dariksha ya lilaya dritta tanora rupa rupa prittaha smayana laka kandala nishka kanta yakchala satsmita sandam haridababase. Translation. As he contemplated her, the goddess of fortune herself, who desires only him, Lord Krishna smiled. The Lord assumes various forms to enact his pastimes, and he was pleased that the form the goddess of fortune had assumed was just suitable for her to serve as his consort. Her charming face was adorned with curling hair, earrings, a locket on her neck, and the nectar of her bright, happy smile. The Lord then spoke to her as follows. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami has quoted an interesting verse spoken by Sri Parasara in the Vishnu Purana. Divatve divadeha yam manushyatve cha manushi Vishno dihana rupam bhaye karo jeshat manastam. When the Lord appears as a demigod, she, the goddess of fortune, takes the form of a demigoddess. And when he appears as a human being, she takes a human-like form. Thus, the body she assumes matches the one Lord Vishnu takes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that as Lord Krishna is even more beautiful than the Lord of Vaikuntha, Lord Krishna's consort Rukmini Devi is even more attractive than the goddess of fortune in the Vaikuntha world. So this is for those who missed the initial verse there, I'll just read that again. It's a very beautiful description of the Supreme Lord with Rukmini, who is none other than the goddess of fortune. So Queen Rukmini's quarters were extremely beautiful, boasting a canopy hung with brilliant strings of pearls, as well as effulgent jewels serving as lamps. Garlands of jasmine and other flowers hung here and there, attracting swarms of humming bees, and the spotless rays of the moon shone through the holes of the lattice windows. As the guru incense drifted out of the window holes, my dear king, the breeze wafting the scent of the Parijata grove carried the mood of a garden into the room. There the queen served her husband, the supreme lord of all the worlds, as he reclined on an opulent pillow on her bed, which was as soft and white as the foam of milk. From her maidservant's hands, goddess Rukmini took a yak hair fan with a jeweled handle, and then she began to worship her master by fanning him. Her hand adorned with rings, bangles and chamara fan, Queen Rukmini looked resplendent, standing near Lord Krishna. Her jeweled ankle bells tinkled and her necklace glittered, reddened by the kumkum from her breast, which were covered by the end of her sari. On her hips she wore a priceless belt. As he contemplated her, the goddess of fortune herself, who desires only him, Lord Krishna smiled. The Lord assumed assumes various forms to enact his pastimes, and he was pleased that the form the goddess of fortune had assumed was just suitable for her to serve as his consort. Her charming face was adorned with curling hair, earrings, a locket on her neck, and the nectar of her bright, happy smile. The Lord then spoke to her as follows. So, people say that the Lord cannot descend as a human being. They say that because he is the very cause, because he is, the concept is that because he's busy managing the material universe, that you know, that is practically his sole occupation, and apart from that, they can see that God, who is supreme, the source of unlimited, you know, the unlimited material world practically, or to speak of the spiritual world, how could he possibly resemble a mere human being? See, so that is a concept. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna answers that directly and says that basically only a mudha would think like that. Only a mudha, which means only a fool or a madman, will not accept that Krishna can descend in the human form and that remain the supreme personality of Godhead. Because all the great acharyas accept that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. All the Shastras accept that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And Krishna himself, by this, you know, very display, revealed that he is the supreme personality of Godhead, full of all opulences. So if someone cannot be convinced by all the saintly acharyas, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, you know, all the acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, all the acharyas, if that's not enough, but then there's all the Shastras. And if that's not enough, Krishna personally comes and displays that I am not an ordinary person. Just if you, this beautiful scene. Here is Krishna in Dwarka. So this is his city, which he built in the sea. All the palaces, all the furniture is made of, you know, ivory and coral and gems. It's not this particle board covered with a laminate, you know. You sort of get a little bit of water on it, it turns into Weet-Bix. You know, it's, you know, opulence. Everything, everything. This is just the one room, just Rukmini's room, is enough to convince you that here is the supreme personality of Godhead with the goddess of fortune. Even just seeing that picture is enough to, what to speak. This is one palace. This is just one room in the palace. To perceive that palace, Rukmini's palace. But this is just one palace. Thousands and thousands of palaces. Very, very opulent. Such a beautiful scene. So imagine that setting. Here is Krishna in this unlimited opulence that we cannot even imagine. With 16,108 beautiful queens, as we know, each of them so beautiful. Rukmini was so beautiful that when the other kings saw her, they all fell off their horses and elephants. You know, she was drop dead gorgeous, as they say. Beautiful, stunning. But what made them all the more beautiful was that they were all engaged in the devotional service of Lord Krishna. And that made them extraordinarily, you know, beautiful. So here is Krishna. How is that the picture of an ordinary human being? Is there any ordinary human being ever who could ever compare with that opulence? There's not. When James Packer got married recently to, I forget who it was, and they spent millions of dollars, you know, maybe $5 or $6 million, you know, and they had some, you know, little, you know, some, you know, beach sort of a thing, and, you know, they had some big boats and things, you know. And they said, on the news, they said, oh, this sort of opulence will never be repeated. There has never been anything like this, and there never will be. Right? You know, they're in these, you know, everything is just, you know, plastic and, you know, artificial materials. You know, there may be a few gems here and there, but here, everything is made from jewels. The pillars, you know, the columns, the roofs, you know, the canopies. There's just an unimaginable wealth. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, sometimes, of course, people try to imitate. People say, I am God. But, you know, God is not so cheap, as Srila Prabhupada will point out. God is not so cheap that just any ordinary person can imitate. You know, these days someone will produce a little bit of ash, a little bit of gold, a little mystic power, you know, just a little miracle here or there. Oh, you must be God. But God doesn't produce just some tiny little, you know, display of magic once or twice in his life. That's not what you expect from God. God displays a miracle, you know, unlimited, you know, unequaled opulence and prowess and potency and power at every moment. Every single scene of his life is inconceivable. That is God. That's what we would expect. So these people who accept, you know, these ordinary rascals as God, they're very, very foolish. And in light of, you know, these wonderful descriptions, which is what you would expect from the Supreme Lord, the confirmation of Shastras, the confirmation of so many Acharyas, if someone can't be convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then nothing will convince them. How can you convince a person? If all the Shastras can't convince them, and all the Acharyas, and the Supreme Lord's own display of unequalled opulence, displaying all the opulences, if that cannot convince people, then, you know, there is nothing that will convince them. Therefore, they're described as rascals, as, you know, demons and rakshasas. This is what's described in the ninth canto, Bhagavad Gita, at ninth chapter, in Krishna's own words. So, here, in this display, of course, as it's described here, Krishna and Rukmini, they are displaying the opulence of the Supreme Lord. In other words, they are displaying pastimes enacted on the level of Lakshmi and Narayan. Lakshmi and Narayan, when the Supreme Lord manifests his opulence as the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world, that is his feature as Lakshmi Narayan. So here, that is what is being displayed by Krishna. But, as described here, it is a little bit more special again because for different reasons. In Vaikuntha, Narayan has one consort, but here in Dwarka, Krishna has, you know, thousands and thousands of queens, consorts, Lakshmis. And that makes Dwarka, you know, all the more special. And there is just a little added sweetness to the pastimes of Dwarka. So Krishna, he has appeared. When the Lord appears as Krishna, he is actually more beautiful and more wonderful in many ways than even Lord Narayan. So much so, that is not, a slight against Lord Narayan, because Lord Narayan himself admits that he is, you know, attracted to the pastimes of Krishna. So, and Lakshmi is also attracted to those pastimes. So when Krishna appears in that more beautiful form, then the goddess of fortune, she also appears in an extra, you know, beautiful form to match the wonderful form, and therefore she appears as Rukmini Devi. So she is the original goddess of fortune. And so Krishna can assume a human form, but although he assumes a human form, it is very easy to see, you know, by the pastimes of the Lord, that he is, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he is no mere ordinary human. He is, although he is appearing in human form, he is still manifesting all the opulences of God. So he appears in the human form because he wants to display to us how we should live in this world in such a way that we can become happy and peaceful in this world, and being happily situated in this world, we can make steady progress on the path back to the spiritual world. So Krishna is teaching us in these pastimes how to actually to be detached from matter, and in these pastimes he is attracting us to the spiritual world. People have some strange ideas about the spiritual world, and when Krishna appeared, he showed that as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his activities with his devotees, which were enacted on the spiritual platform, they're a replica of the spiritual world. So therefore they attract us. Who would want, you know, after, you know, getting, you know, a little understanding of Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka or Vrindavan, who would want to stay in the material world? It's like, you know, a lot of people go up north to Queensland because they hear, oh, you know, they've got the beaches, and, you know, they've got better weather and like that. So, you know, when someone hears this, oh, there's a better place, then, you know, sometimes they want to go to that place. It's very natural. So after hearing, after, you know, appreciating the nature of the spiritual world, you know, Krishna knows that that will attract us back. And at the same time, as he is displaying a little portion of his activities in the spiritual world, he's also showing us how to get back to the spiritual world by manifesting how to follow the laws of religion, principally which are set down in the Varnashram system. And in this particular instance, he's displaying how husband and wife live together peacefully. In his pastimes in Dwarka, Krishna displays what is the perfect example of the husband, what is the perfect example of the wife, and how all those married couples, you know, raise God-conscious children, and they're supported by a society, guided in a society which is guided by Brahmanas, protected by Kshatriyas, provided for by Vaishyas, and you know, so much work done by the Sudras. So this is the perfect Varnashram system which Krishna is showing. Now, because Krishna is God, he doesn't have to tend to all the so much he doesn't have to run around after his wife or so many wives. He's God, who can God's, if we were God's wife, you expect that I have married God now, everything I want you'll provide. He doesn't have to. He's God. He's fully independent. God doesn't need a wife. God doesn't need friends. He doesn't need servants because he's the Supreme Lord. Whatever he wants is immediately manifest just by his will. He doesn't need to take help from any extraneous source. He doesn't need a mother. He doesn't need a father. He has no desire to fulfill. He's God. He's completely self-satisfied. Everything for his own pleasure, self-satisfaction, he is completely self-sufficient, completely independent. And yet, he is here, we see this picture, where he is acting almost like a henpecked husband. We see in the pastime, in the previous chapter, where Narada Muni had given a flower to Rukmini, which had made Satyabhama a little jealous. Satyabhama has that nature. She became, because she saw, here is your wife. She has got this Parijata flower which comes from heaven. Is she more special than me? So she displayed some jealousy, some anger to Krishna. And Krishna, as a dutiful husband, then he went to heaven after he killed Narakasura. And Narakasura, the demon, of course, had stolen the earrings and the umbrella and what have you from heaven. So he took them back to Indra. And when he went, he took Satyabhama with him just so he could get the Parijata flower. But of course, Satyabhama decided we'll take a whole tree. So Krishna took the whole tree. And he was, determined that he would satisfy Satyabhama and bring back that Parijata tree. So you see in Krishna's dealings with his queens that he satisfied their needs in all regards, which is the duty of the husband. The duty of a husband, that, if it's a good lesson for the brahmacharis, if they can get married, I'll tell you some of the things you have to do. You have to provide, it is a duty, to provide clothing, jewelry, expensive jewelry, quality, really nice food, nice house, children, education, so many things. It's a big list. We won't come into that, it'll take a couple of classes. But that is actually the duty of the husband. He must provide those things. And brahmacharis, beware. But Krishna was, very happy to do that because, not because he was attracted, oh, here are these very beautiful women, I will provide so many things and they will stay with me because I'm very lusty. That's how, people in this material world think. But Krishna, he was very satisfied with their pure devotional service. That's why he reciprocated with them. That's why he was very happy. He remained like their henpecked husband, and satisfied that their desire was, Krishna, you please be my husband. You be with me every day, just like my husband, as my husband. So Krishna fulfilled their desire. See, Krishna has no needs, no desires to fulfill, but he's very happy to fulfill the desires of his devotees because of their very, very nice service. You see Rukmini here. She has so many maidservants. She has this description. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it. This description of her quarters in the palace is to let us see how wonderfully Rukmini was serving her husband. She has made such a beautiful arrangement. Any husband will walk into a room like that and think, you know, this you know, wife is just, you know, out of this world. This setting is just beautiful like that. So, and though so many maidservants were there, you know, she's very eager to take the fan and to, you know, personally fan the Lord, you know. And the queens were, you know, they were always very eager to do so many services for Krishna. Always, you know, they thought of Krishna night and day and always thought of pleasing him. And therefore, because of that pure devotional service, he agreed to fulfill their desires and to remain, you know, with them. So they all thought, each queen was completely satisfied. He had 16,108 queens, and each queen was thinking, you know, he's just with me, and he, you know, I am getting all the special treatment, you know, and those poor other wives, you know, they're like, you know, they're missing out there like that, but here I am, you know, just getting all this special attention from Krishna. So each and every wife thought like that. So that is the duty of the husband. And of course the duty of the wife is very nice. You know, Vedic system is a very nice system where the whole system is for everyone to be happy and peaceful. The husband is happy and peaceful. The wife is happy and peaceful. The workers are happy and peaceful. The intelligentsia are happy and peaceful. Where do you see that in this material world? In this material world, some countries want to kill the intelligentsia, you know, or they want to enslave the workers, you know, or women are being, you know, abused, or, you know, this or that. Vedic society means that everyone is happy. Everyone. The men, the women, the children, all sections, all divisions, the animals, the trees, everyone. That is Vedic culture. So you see here Krishna displaying the perfect husband and the queen displaying the perfect wife. Actually, Satyabhama, one time along with Krishna, Krishna went to visit the Pandavas. And when they were there, Krishna was talking with the Pandavas, and Markandeya Rishi also arrived there, and there was some conversations. Anyway, while they were busy, Satyabhama went and spoke with Draupadi, and she asked Draupadi that, you have five husbands. How, you know, can you please teach me, you know, your, because you are famous for your chastity and your womanly skills, can you please teach me, how can you keep five husbands so happy, you know, because if I can learn something from you, then I can, you know, go back to Krishna and, you know. So Draupadi, she said, the way I serve my husbands is that I completely subdue vanity, lust, anger, and she says she served her husbands with great devotion, and in order to conquer over jealousy, because they also had other wives as well. In order to conquer over jealousy, she, you know, just always meditated upon her service with devotion. never allowing these thoughts of, you know, jealousy or anger or anything into her head. She said that she would never ever, you know, allow thoughts of another man or a celestial to enter her mind or her heart. She would not bathe, eat or sleep before her husband. She was the first to rise, not only before her husband's, before her husband's or her husband's servants or followers. She was the first to rise in the morning and the last to go to bed. She said she never ever felt that her position as servant to her husband was a degraded one. But she actually accepted her husband as the representative of God and knew that by pleasing them, the Supreme Lord himself would be pleased. Whenever they would appear, she would immediately rise. If she happened to be sitting, lying, if they would appear, she would immediately get up and she would tend to their needs, make sure they had a seat and a drink. And she always made sure, as we hear with this description of Rukmini, that their quarters, wherever they were, even if it happened to be in the forest, but everything was as beautiful and as fragrant and as clean and tidy as possible. And like this. So she explained like that, you know, to Satyabhama how she served and pleased. So this is Vedic culture. You know, the women have a duty, the men have a duty, but the goal is that both of them are completely satisfied and completely happy. That is the goal. That is very important to understand. And through that, they actually become satisfied and peaceful. And when there's that peace, then one can execute, one can make progress on the spiritual path. You know, Srila Prabhupada pointed out, you know, sometimes when he went to different countries and he noticed when there was extreme disturbance, that people had to live under extremely disturbing situation, he said it was very difficult for those people to become Krishna conscious. When people are so disturbed, it is very difficult for them to, you know, nicely progress in spiritual life. The disturbance in family, disturbance, you know, in the streets, when it's very disturbed. When life is peaceful, then it is very helpful to make progress in the spiritual life. And therefore, Varnashram is meant for that, to make people peaceful, happy, and therefore give them the best circumstances whereby they can, you know, progress. People these days, they have no time. People are so disturbed. You know, you see so many people that come to the temples or the farms. You know, these days, so many, you have to choose, you know, you meet so many people and then you have to work out, well, out of five people I met today, four were crazy and one I could actually have a conversation with. And people are so disturbed that you can barely, you know, they're so disturbed they're losing the faculty of their minds, just the anxiety. And you can't speak to them. You can't sit them down these days for long enough. If someone, you know, someone has to, you know, wait 5-10 minutes. Now, people don't have time. They're all, you know, just full of anxiety. They're impatient. They're intolerant. And the whole process of spiritual life is, you know, you sit and you listen to the sadhus for hours, as often as you can, as much as you can. That's spiritual life. Take association with devotees and sit and hear from them. Question them. If you've only got 5 minutes, you know, every now and then, and in that 5 minutes you're disturbed and your mind is full of, how can you prosecute? What can you understand? How can you sit and chant Hare Krishna? You know, we know that, you know, when people come to chant Hare Krishna, they find it very difficult. They can't sit and just chant Hare Krishna because there's so much other things going through their mind. So, you know, this is Vedic culture. And this is what Krishna is displaying. He is, you know, manifesting the fulfilling the duties of the husband, his queens are perfectly fulfilling the duties of a wife, and they're raising these wonderful children, and the children are perfectly fulfilling. If you want to learn how to be a child, how a parent relates to their children, how the children relate to the parent, again, that is there. Just like, you know, Prajumna, he would, you know, he would never raise his voice in his parents' presence. Never show anger, never raise his voice. When he would approach Krishna, his father, you know, he would look at his feet. Like that. And, you know, whatever Krishna wanted, he would immediately take that as his, you know, goal in life. And if anything displeased Krishna, he would not have anything to do with it. And Krishna would say to, you know, Krishna would say to Prajumna, you know, Prajumna, you know, you're standing there, you know, with your head down, looking at my feet. Come and sit on my lap so I can give you a big cuddle. That's what Krishna said. You know. So you say, Prajumna, you come here, you know, you're my little boy. You sit on my lap and let me give you a big cuddle. And Prajumna's, you know, all shy. So this is, you know, very sweet, beautiful reciprocations on all levels. And so, although Krishna appears like an ordinary henpecked husband, you know, people feel that, you know, he was sensuous and, you know, he was, you know, under the control of, you know, women. And, you know, people make these ridiculous statements about Krishna. But they cannot see. Krishna was not henpecked because he never ever failed to execute religious principles. Someone who's henpecked does that. You know, they, because they're henpecked by either the husband or, you know, the wife or whatever, well, that would be something else, wouldn't it? But, yeah. Anyway. But, I'll leave that thought. If they're henpecked, they give up religious principles, right? And we saw that with Indra, because when Krishna went to the heavenly planets to take the, you know, he took back Aditi's earrings, he took back the umbrella and the peak of the mountain, what have you. So Indra was very thankful. Oh, you know, you've saved, you know, the priceless treasures of the, you know, heavenly kingdom, and you've killed this big demon. So then on the way, you know, back, you know, Satyabhama thought, oh, you know, I'll take one of those parijatas with us. And Indra, you know, so then Indra's wives are saying, they're inciting him, don't let him take that. They're meant to be, you know, they're just for heaven. They're not for anyone else. So his wives were actually pushing him, you know, go and stop Krishna, fight with him, get that tree back. So he did it. He chased after God, give me back my tree. Everything belongs to, that's henpecked. He gave up. He acted like a fool, you know, gave up religious principles, insulted God. That's henpecked. But Krishna never ever did anything so foolish like that. Krishna can take the parijata tree, everything belongs to him anyway. He didn't break religious principles. So, and actually, in the long run, we see that Krishna, you know, he chose to wind up his pastimes, and wound up the whole show in order to, you know, display, that in the course of time, we gradually become detached from our activities, you know, in this world, and more we try and become attached to the activities in the spiritual world. So when Krishna was fighting with, you know, Indra, he was thinking that he was very adamant that Satyabhama has pleased me very much by her devotional service, and I am determined that she will get that tree. So it's described in the Nectar of Devotion that one of the qualities of Krishna is he is very determined. Determined, one of the, someone is called determined. If someone follows regulative principles and they fulfill their promises by practical activity, they're called determined. So Krishna has that quality. And he displayed that when he defeated Indra and took that tree. And Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that his devotees will never ever perish. And in so many different instances, so many different statements, Krishna says that he will look after his devotees, he will protect them, he will maintain them, he will take them back to Godhead. These are the promises of Krishna. And he is very determined. And he fulfills his promises by practical activity. So you can guarantee that if we take Krishna's example and execute, Krishna consciousness by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and associating with the Vaishnavas and living peacefully in this world according to religious principles, that Krishna will fulfill his promise and take us back to the spiritual world. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.